So last week, we ended. We were talking about not forcing anyone or either from disciples or from guru or from any angle, forcing anyone take initiation from anybody, even forcing people to take initiation. I think we talked about that also. Not even a question of taking initiation from a certain person, but even forcing people before they're ready to make full commitment to take initiation. Actually, I don't know if we spoke about that. Does anyone remember if we spoke about that aspect? I know we spoke about the aspect of disciples not coercing people to become disciples of their guru, or even disciples of any guru. But maybe you're a disciple of one guru and you like coercing people to take initiation from another guru. So, but I don't know if we spoke about kind of pushing people to take initiation in general, just the principle that you've been around for a while, you should take initiation. That it's a principle, of course, in our scripture, but Prabhupada's principle was always that it has to come from the individual. Of course, you could say, well, in the beginning, Prabhupada just gave initiation, whether or not people were ready, and that's true. But now, in retrospect, when we have so many devotees and so many people are lining up for initiation because Shastra says that's one of the most important things, then people begin to feel pressured. And pressured before perhaps they're fully confident they can follow their vows. So Prabhupada always taught that people should learn Krishna consciousness through the regular practices, and from that voluntarily want to follow. And voluntarily, everything's about voluntary. Everything's about, you see, here it's a problem. But does anyone remember if we talked about this? Because I don't want to elaborate on it if we've already, it's already on it. If I've talked about it previously. Well, if you don't remember, either that means I didn't talk about it or we all have bad memories. Life is so busy, we can't remember that I spoke about 3 days ago, right? So, anyway, I'll just talk about this until someone says, yes, you did speak about it. So, one thing I may have spoken to you about, if not, I'll speak about it now, but it's very important. You have two things going on in your spiritual life. One is pushing and one is pulling. And what do I mean by that? I mean that before one has a taste, or before the inspiration is naturally there, you have to push yourself. Push yourself to get up, push yourself to chant, push yourself to read, push yourself to go and do your service. Pushing, 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 pushing. And then when either you advance more or you just connect to a particular service, or you just connect to the, just the idea of making the world Krishna consciousness. And you connect in a really deep way to any aspect of Krishna consciousness so that you're no longer being pushed. You no longer have to push yourself, but you're actually being pulled by inspiration. Then nobody has to tell you to do something. Nobody has to force you. You will certainly get inspired by hearing from Prabhupada and advanced devotees. You're already inspired. Excuse me. You're already inspired. So you're just getting more inspired. It's not that. You come, like every Tuesday night, you come to listen and you're like down, down, down on your last thread. And you hear this class and it blows you up. But as I give in the example, you're like a balloon with a hole in it. So gradually it fizzles out. By the next class, you're down on your last thread. So it's not like that. And then we would say, okay, to such person, you should get initiated. You know, you've been chanting for a year or two, you should get initiated. We don't want to make people feel guilty that they're not initiated. And we don't want to make people feel guilty who are overly dependent on others' inspiration to keep them sane and keep them inspired. But inspiration, it really needs to come from within. So that was Prabhupada's point. He didn't want us to force people to move into temples. Excuse me. He didn't want us to force people. He wanted people to understand Krishna consciousness and want to practice it on their own. He wanted people to willingly do austerity because they understood the importance of it. And austerity can be something that's relishable. Like you get up early, you chant, it's an austerity, but it's quite relishable when it comes from your own willingness to do it. So he wanted us to hear, and then by hearing, we'd see the importance of the practice, and we would do it voluntarily. So that's a stable position of Krishna consciousness. The unstable position is that you become highly dependent on the inspiration of others, which means you don't really have much of it yourself. Of course, we're all inspired by others, that's for sure. But real inspiration comes from Krishna within the heart due to one's sincerity, one's desire to serve. And that inspiration is, it remains constant and it increases. So when a devotee connects very deeply with a philosophy to the point that voluntarily they want to do it, they don't have to be pushed all the time. And particularly when they connect very deeply with a service, something that's very inspiring, something that's connected with a vision that really inspires them, or connected with a particular service that is in sync with their nature, then that inspiration becomes very strong from within, and they get a lot of energy, because everybody knows that when you're inspired, it's like you have unlimited sources of, it's like an unlimited source of energy within you, and you can just work, and never tire, and you can just go. So in Krishna consciousness, there's so many things to do, so everyone can find something that inspires them. So that's a good state of spiritual life to be in, and that's a good state from which to take initiation. And of course, when you take initiation, you're making vows, so you want to have that conviction that naturally comes from understanding why to take the vows. You want to have the conviction from understanding the essential importance of japa. And then you're in a good position, or a more stable position. Whereas if you're tottering, you know, some days good, some days bad, you're really, really dependent on other people to blow up your balloon because you have a hole in it. It's not such a good position from which to take initiation, because it shouldn't, you know, I don't want to say we shouldn't struggle to be Krishna conscious, but at the same time, I do want to say we shouldn't struggle. At least we should be advanced enough, but we should have enough taste and inspiration coming to do devotional service that the main practices will not be should not be a struggle. Of course, you know, we change, the situations change in our life. So where you're at now, you may be in a good position, and in the future, circumstantially, you may not be in such a good position. And so it may be more that you have to push in the future because of the situation you're in. But if your conviction is very deep about the need for austerity, if your conviction is very deep in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, you'll find it much easier to follow. And if your conviction must be very deep in the essential importance of chanting the Maha Mantra, otherwise it can be put on a back burner very easily. You put off your rounds for later, you don't finish them, or you don't chant well. So I think a lot of people, when they take initiation, maybe they don't understand the ramifications of what they're doing because they're already doing it and they think, well, I'm just confirming what I'm already doing. And in many cases, that is true. But what I'm saying is that if you look into the future of your entire life and all the situations you will face, unless there's deep conviction about the importance of chanting, you really understand it in relation to all the other processes of bhakti, and it's something that has become extremely important to you in your life, and the following the regular principles have become extremely important to you as your foundation, then it can be possible you get thrown off when situations in your life change. I was also thinking about this, you know, this illicit sex thing, it's such a problem. And it becomes such a problem that even devotees who take initiation, sometimes they don't fully understand the importance of it, or, you know, what's wrong. You know, I just have sex with my wife, so what's wrong with that? You know, I'm not doing it with anyone else. Of course, the principle is sex for procreation, not sex for recreation. But if you deeply understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, one thing starts to become clear, and that's Krishna's pastimes have nothing to do with sex life as we understand it here in this plane. It has nothing to do with sensual attraction of two material bodies. It's completely transcendental, and it only has to do with pure love. It has absolutely nothing at all whatsoever to do with mundane romance, mundane physical attraction. So the point is, as much as we are attracted physically to the opposite sex, and particularly as much as we are engaged in physical sex, to that degree we are blocked from entering the proper understanding of Krishna's pastimes. And it's one of the aspirations of the pure devotees to be able to understand those pastimes. Actually, it's the aspiration to become part of those pastimes. So what to speak of being part of them if you don't even understand them? How would you ever become part of them? So it begins with understanding them. There's a song in which, I guess it's Narottam Das Thakur. Vishaya, how does that go? It's Kauranga balite habe, pulaka shari hari hari balite nayana bhabene. Visha, and then I forget the next line. So he say, when will that day come when, you know, I'll be in ecstasy? And then, when will that day come when I give up sense gratification so that I can understand jugala priti, the pastimes of Radha and Krishna? So he's making this point that as long as I have a desire to enjoy, I won't be able to understand those pastimes because those pastimes have nothing to do with material enjoyment. So that's an important realization. And I've talked about this before, that Krishna says, understand me in truth, and you go back to Godhead, but you can't understand Krishna in truth unless you're somewhat transcendental, because Krishna's pastimes have nothing to do with the mundane world. So because of our desire to enjoy this world, we tend to think of Krishna's pastimes similar to our consciousness and our life and our activities. And if you're not a devotee, you definitely, when you see Krishna's pastimes, you just think they're like everyone else's pastimes. So I think a lot of devotees have not gone to this depth of understanding, you know, that sexual desires are very difficult to control, but you have to have an impetus to control them. You have to understand why to control them. And at least for me, this is a huge impetus that I want to, and we all want to enter the leelas of Radha and Krishna, and we want to be able to understand and relish them here and now, because understanding these leelas will not only give us relish, but will purify us of all traces of mundane consciousness. So the price you have to pay to understand these highest leelas is to refrain from imitating them in your own life. And if you imitate them in your own life, you block yourself from understanding those leelas. And so you deprive yourself of this ultimate nectar. And that ultimate nectar is what gives you the faith and conviction to continue in Krishna consciousness. So the point I was making is that when someone takes initiation vows, if they're very deeply rooted in the understanding of why they've made those vows and what those vows entail, and particularly what are the results you get from following those vows. Being here, as we're saying, your ability to understand the leelas of Krishna, especially with the gopis, enter into a feeling also, and it's hard to describe exactly what I mean by understand, because that understanding yields tremendous realization and bliss and so forth. But if you can't control your own sexual life, you block yourself from that whole world of realization and that whole world of understanding. So that's the view of the pure devotees. When will I be able to give up sense gratification so I can understand those pastimes? So when you're firmly rooted in that realization, then it's not so difficult to follow initiation vows. But if you're not well-rooted and you're just being pressured, do it. Due to mundane conditioning, many, many devotees take initiation. They find it extremely difficult to give up illicit sex. Of course, you know, as we said, broad definition of illicit sex is you keep sex within marriage. So it's not that they're polluting virgin girls or other men's wives or like that. But still, it blocks one from entering to those higher understandings. It's just like it's said, when you worship the deities, you can make offense, and those offenses can be harmful for your bhakti. But when you worship Mahaprabhu, there is no offense. But it doesn't mean that if you're thinking in the wrong way, even though they don't take offense, it doesn't have an ill effect on you. So you could say, well, you know, broad definition is no illicit sex, is keep sex in marriage. So then it becomes sex more for recreation than procreation. So you could say, okay, in a broad sense, it's still not breaking the principle, but it is affecting you because you're not doing it as service anymore, you're doing it as enjoyment. So obviously anything you do for personal enjoyment, it kind of keeps you outside the realm of understanding deeply Krishna's Leela, because Krishna's Leela is beyond. It has nothing to do with, there's nothing personally motivated in the activities of Krishna's devotees. And if we want to understand those pastimes, what to speak of enter those pastimes, we also have to come to that platform of pure motivation. So you see how important it is to understand deeply the reasons that we do things, just like in our japa workshop, we spent a lot of time explaining the central importance of japa in the practice of bhakti. And Prabhupada said, of all the regulative principles given by the spiritual master, the order to chant 16 rounds is most essential. So this is like everything Prabhupada's given us, this is the most essential. So when you understand that deeply, then your 16 rounds becomes important to you, and you do it well, and you give the priority to it, and you give time to it. And we see that in our movement in general, not everybody does that. A lot of it's circumstantial because people are busy. But whatever the case is, not everybody does it because they don't understand it deeply. And so when you get initiated, it's really important that you understand the importance of all these principles. Now, gambling and meat eating are not such a problem, and the biggest problem for Indians is giving up tea, and some devotees have a background with addiction, either alcohol or narcotics or other drugs. And so anyone who's battled with that has to be, you know, if they take initiation or if you've battled with gambling, you know, you definitely have to set boundaries in your life too, so that you'll never be in a situation where you would be ever tempted to do that. And that's the pushing, that's the determination. But again, you have to understand the depths of that problem. And because what we're actually doing in Krishna consciousness is we're forming another kind of addiction, and we're becoming addicted to devotee association. We're becoming addicted to chanting, and we're becoming addicted to hearing. And so if we're addicted to anything else, well, you could be addicted to prasadam. If you're addicted to anything else, then that addiction takes you away from Krishna. So we want the addictions that bring us to Krishna. And self-control, self-discipline is essential in the practice of devotional service. So if anyone has a background with addiction and they take initiation, they have to be firmly rooted in understanding how detrimental addiction is and how much it can ruin one's bhakti, and how actually we're trying, you know, the goal is to always be surrounded by Krishna's devotees, by hearing and chanting, and the goal is to become addicted to Krishna consciousness. So you can use that propensity, become addicted to Krishna consciousness, that's fine. But anyway, I think you understand the point I'm making here is that you have to have internal reasons which make sense to you, which drive you on a daily basis to follow principles, to chant your rounds. And if you, and this is what we want to give to other people, not only we have them for ourselves, but we want to give them to other devotees. And so that they have them also, so when they take initiation, they are also inspired from within, and it's a very, I would say, I think it's a caution, we should be cautioned if our conviction, or it's not only conviction, it's also understanding why we follow these principles, why we're chanting 16 rounds. That if we easily forget, or we're very dependent on the inspiration of others, it's not a healthy state. If we easily forget, it probably means we haven't really understood it deeply enough or broadly enough. And if we're dependent on the inspiration of others, it can also mean that we're not connected with the service that's highly inspiring. And I'm not saying that we are not dependent on the inspiration of others. We can all be more inspired. There's no question about that. But I'm talking about for the daily routine, daily service, you know, if it becomes drudgery, and if we're always pushing ourselves, it's not a healthy sign. The healthy sign is that we've connected in our service with something which is very inspiring, something which is challenging, something which motivates us to get up out of bed every day. And we don't need anybody to push us. It just comes from within. That's a healthy state. That's the state we want to be in. And a lot of devotees may not be connected to a service that inspires them. And I always suggest that you find that service. You look into your heart to understand what inspires you. And if you just say, I have no idea, it means you're really disconnected or you're somewhere up in the clouds or something. I don't know, so many devotees tell me this, and I just can't relate to that. How could you not know yourself well enough? You know, after living 20, 30 years, can't you remember what inspired you in life, you know? Is it to write music, perform on stage, to teach, to organize? It's just, you know, which varna do you fit into? Is it just, I just get inspired by projects that I can assist? Well, what kind of project do you want to assist? What inspires you? Well, it's festivals. I love doing festivals. Oh, okay. So now you know. He said, but I'm not a manager, I'm not going to preach at the festival, I'm not going to do kirtans. I just want to help. I just want to assist anybody. That just inspires me so much to see people come. Or I'd been so inspired, you know, by preaching to young kids in foster homes or going to prisons and whatever it is. And Prabhupada said it doesn't matter what it is, but something that really inspires you is very important. You lose that inspiration, you can't do anything. And your spiritual life, Maya is going to come when you're not inspired. That's how she gets you. When you lose your inspiration, Maya comes and just, you have no momentum, so she doesn't have to stop you. Basically, you're stopped, and then she can just tie you up. When you're moving, you're hard to catch, and you're hard to tie up because you're always moving. So, of course, we want to encourage people to advance in Krishna consciousness. And part of that encouragement means we want to encourage them to connect with a guru, as I've said many times. Don't really encourage people to take initiation as much as encourage them to connect with a guru. Not a specific guru, but connect, even if they're not ready for initiation, but connect through siksha. Find someone that can guide you, take shelter, take guidance of somebody. Even if you can't see in the near future or even in any future that you would become initiated, that's not what we're telling people. We're saying, take guidance, take inspiration from this person, you know, or from any person, whoever it is. Think about who inspires. Think about, it's not even such a mental thing. Just, you know, we need guidance. Every one of us needs guidance. So find someone that can give you guidance, and there can be many people that do that. So that's what I would encourage. I would encourage people always. Find a siksha guru, find someone. Long before you even think you're ready for diksha, because many people are not even on that platform. So you don't have to force people to take diksha. By connecting with a siksha guru, that will happen naturally when the time is right. And it may not be that siksha guru that they even take diksha from. So that's how you follow the principle that once you, it's there in nectar devotion, once you take shelter of a guru, once you serve a guru, once you learn how to serve under his guidance. And one of the principles is to take initiation, but it doesn't mean you're necessarily going to take initiation from that siksha guru. It's likely you would, but many siksha gurus won't give diksha, and many of those siksha gurus just may be local devotees. But at least one develops a relationship, gets guidance, and then gradually one may find someone who could give diksha and take shelter of them, even if they're not ready for it. And so that's better. It's more natural. It's more gradual. Then it puts the onus of decision on the individual, not that we make the decision for them, that we're pushing. No, you know, you've been a devotee for 3 years. You really should take initiation. You really have to think about it. We should say, you should really take shelter of a guru, of someone who can guide you. Don't worry about when and how you're going to take diksha. But just take the guidance. That's the main thing. And as we've said many, many times, the main function of the guru is siksha. Because siksha is ongoing, and siksha is what elevates you. It's not diksha. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said, diksha is like a push. It's the siksha that's really the wind. Okay, you know, we push your boat off the dock. You get a good push, you know, or the tugboat pulls you. But it's the wind that's going to keep you going. So diksha is it's a push. It's an impetus. But the siksha is the wind in the sails. So the siksha is most important. Wherever you get it, that's what's going to keep you going. So that's why it's good to encourage people to find siksha from someone, because that's going to be the main thing that they're going to get anyway after initiation. And that's the essence of initiation, is the continuing siksha. And if you are initiated by a guru and you're taking siksha from another guru, then you understand the essence of that relationship with that other guru is the instruction, because they can't give you diksha anyway. So there isn't going to be diksha. It's only based on siksha. And everything else is the same that it would be with a diksha guru. The hearing, the service, the faith, and all of that. The only difference was that guru didn't give you diksha. And then some say, well, what? Does he actually take your karma? Why not? Prabhupada said the temple president takes the karma. Whenever the parents take the karma, whenever there's a relationship of dependent and superior, there's always some karma exchange in some way. So we shouldn't think that the fundamentals of guru and disciple are different, essentially different when one takes diksha than they are when one has firm faith and takes shelter of a siksha guru. So when you encourage people to take shelter of a siksha guru, then in a sense, they have a guru even though they're not initiated, and even if that guru is not a diksha guru. But still, they have that guru-disciple relationship. They have the essence of it. And so that's easy to encourage, because there's no, at that point, they don't have to make any commitment. The siksha guru may demand a commitment. That's another thing. But the commitment he demands will be less, or it will be for a period of time. Okay, you're my Sikshya disciple. I want you to chant 16 rounds and follow the regular principles for 6 months, and let's see how that goes. Something like that, or for 1 month, or chant 4 rounds of 3 principles. In other words, it's not a formal commitment, and it will likely be lighter. So it's as I've been saying in all these classes, we want to develop things which evolve more naturally. And it's not healthy if we coerce people or put them on a conveyor belt or put them down a funnel and says, you all fit in this funnel. Now, you might say, and I think we talked about this yesterday, but it seems that in some places there is a bit of a funnel. And in some cases it's hard to avoid the funnel because you have a very advanced devotee with many disciples in one area. And so when people come, they naturally take shelter of him, because the others have taken shelter. And their spiritual life is not damaged because they fully didn't make the decision themselves, but they kind of just went along with the culture, because the person they're taking shelter of is fully qualified. So in that sense, it's not that there's a bad result. But the only thing that would be bad is that people in that temple would make that person feel bad, or the culture makes them feel bad, or feel that there's something wrong with them if they don't take initiation from that person. That wouldn't be good. But if it's open and you can take initiation from everyone, and naturally most are taking from one, probably the majority will still take from that one, but at least if it's a decision they make, then it's more natural and it's healthier. And one of the things, it's hard to avoid when that guru is prominent, then you're, as a new devotee, you're getting instruction from them. You're interacting with them a lot. So naturally the relationship develops. So that's fine, because it's natural. It's not that people are going out and saying, you should take initiation from him. They may say, come to class, he's a really good devotee and you really like him, hear from him. That's different. Of course we want to do that. We want to encourage everyone to hear, of course. But let the relationship develop naturally. And if you ever see that someone is developing a relationship with a guru, but you feel it's not really natural, or it's some way they're becoming a groupie, so to speak, or it's just they're caught up in the fanfare, you may want to talk to them and say, you know, is this actually the person, or is it just because other people are taking initiation that you're getting excited, or you actually feel that this is someone you could really serve your entire life, and that, you know, hearing from them really inspires you, and so on. So we just want to make it real. That's important. So that's for gurus all the way down to disciples and everyone in between, temple presidents, GBC sannyasis, and so forth. No one wants to coerce. No one should coerce anyone. Now, a guru shows affection to many people, or he wants to help many people, and that's his mission, whether they accept him as a disciple or not. His mission is, I'm not going to help you to get you as a disciple. Especially, I like you because I noticed that you're driving a Jaguar, so you must have a lot of money, so definitely I'm going to really spend my time and take care of you because I know you can give me a lot of money. That would be wrong. And of course, that temptation will always be there, and there's always the temptation for gurus who are not fixed to want to increase the number of their disciples for personal name and fame. And so Shastra warns us against that. And so the function of the guru is to help as many people as possible, disciples, not disciples, it doesn't matter. He's not after accumulation of money or disciples. If he is, everything is ruined. So just as the disciple should not be after accumulation of I want to get the top guru in ISKCON, you know, then that'll give me prestige. And the guru should not be after getting the top disciple, because that will get him prestige or get him money or whatever, or get a large, you know, if I go preach in this area, there's no gurus here and so many people are joining, I'll have 500 disciples in a year, so let me go there. It's not, we don't make decisions based on that. So the idea is that everything is pure, that the guru is offering his instructions, his kindness to everybody. And how they want to take it is up to them. And he's always kind, even if the disciple turns his back or her back on the guru, he's always showing mercy and kindness. I mean, sometimes sometimes a guru may reject a disciple. It's kind of useless or offensive or whatever. And sometimes Shastra says that the guru should do that. Otherwise, he'll get the karma of the disciple. Just like a disciple should reject a guru as fallen down, fallen away from Krishna, or turned against Krishna, or is offending the Vaishnavas. So, those are special cases. But generally, the guru gives mercy to everyone. Not because he wants to make disciples, but he wants to help people become Krishna conscious. If they want to become disciples, then of course, he will accept them, and he'll want to make sure that their relationship is real. So, that's the idea. So, that's what I wanted to say. And Prabhupada says, I also like to point you may another class that we should feel dependent on devotees or guru, but not overly dependent. Yeah, it's, well, then you have this idea. You're dependent on devotees in the guru, but not overly dependent, like asking when to tie my shoe. Yeah. So you naturally get this kind of... See, the idea is that your dependency is the idea that Prabhupada said one should always feel themselves a fool before their spiritual master. And what Prabhupada meant is that you can't hear if you think you know more than the person you're hearing from. Like if you go to a class and it's a devotee who knows less than you, younger than you, it's very difficult to learn because right off you think, well, I could give a better class and they're not going to say anything I don't know. And they may even say things which are wrong. So you have to be able to hear properly, you have to have faith in that person. And you have to think, actually, I don't know anything. I'm just a fool. What do I know? But my spiritual master, he can enlighten me. So that's the dependent side. But the independent side, which is the balance of it, that once I hear, I have the confidence to apply the instruction. So, and I have the common sense to understand it and apply it. Now, also, going back to the dependence, you understand the principle, right? Okay, this is what to do. It's very clear. Then if you still think, I'm a fool, I can't do anything, no, that's wrong. You know, for every little detail of the execution of this instruction, I need to ask my spiritual master. Well, in some cases, it may be a really difficult job, and it may involve things which are legal issues, which if you make a mistake could be disastrous, or it may involve siddhanta where you need to get clear on something that's very important to the execution of that service. That's a different thing. But if it's just simple common sense things, then if you feel I'm a fool, I don't know anything, and then you can't even use your own common sense, then your dependency on your guru becomes a weakness where you actually can't think for yourself. And it's not at all what Prabhupada wanted. He wanted very much that we take the instructions, which are like a road map, and say, okay, now you have the road map, now go, just get there. Well, how am I going to get there? Figure it out. Rent a car, hitchhike, fly, get the money, get a train, just get there. Here's the map, you get there. Well, Gurudev, should I take the train that leaves at 10 o'clock, or what do you think it's better I take the one that leaves at 12? You don't think your spiritual master has like enough to do that he has to answer that question for you? That's the idea. You become so dependent. What do I know? I'm just a fool. I don't know. Maybe the 12 o'clock train's better. Now, in some cases, it might be that your guru has traveled on this train a million times. So you're asking him, what's a better train? What do you suggest? Okay. But if it's for every little detail of everything, you can't think, and is it better I tie my shoe this way or that way? Or another aspect is that you're asking your guru questions about very mundane things, which are not really the duty of the guru to deal with. You know? So, you know, sometimes it's hard to draw the line because the question may involve getting a job, and that sounds like a mundane thing, but there may be ramifications of getting the job that your guru can see, which would be detrimental to your devotional service, and that's why you're asking. But you're not asking, well, I could get this job, but I have to work 2 more hours and I'd make this much more money, but then this job is closer and I wouldn't have to work as much. You know, it's just like you should have the intelligence from hearing all the instructions of your spiritual master, of Srila Prabhupada and so forth, to make those kinds of decisions. So the problem is that if you become too dependent, somehow you lose the ability to use common sense. You lose the ability to make just ordinary proper decisions. And Prabhupada said that when the spiritual master leaves, then he'll guide you from within the heart. So he doesn't have to leave to guide you from within the heart. So that's a principle. The sincere devotee is guided from within the heart. So sometimes someone may ask a question to Prabhupada and he says, just be sincere and pray to Krishna, he'll guide you. So that idea is there, that Krishna will guide you. Yes? So you understand, I'm sure. So, you know, it's a fine balance because you don't want to not be dependent, because if you're not dependent, then it leans on the side of pride. And if you're overly dependent, it leans on the side of lack of intelligence and weakness of overdependence. Right? You understand? So, you know, everything in life is about balance. You know, we hear the songs of the acharyas that say, you know, your mercy is all I made of. That's true. Because mercy is a commodity that you have to get from the acharyas. You can't, you know, all of us are dependent on mercy. But when you get the mercy, now what do? You go, oh, I don't know what to do with this. You know, your guru just gave you a car, now what do? Learn to drive. Gurudev, can you show me, how to drive the car also? No, I gave you the car for service, you figure out how to drive it, you know. You don't need me for that. Right? One thing I wanted to relate to you, which relates really well to, I think, a foundational principle, and maybe we need to articulate this within what we're doing in our preaching, is that one key ingredient of the most successful companies in the world, particularly I think maybe Google might be the leader in this area, is that they give people a tremendous amount of freedom right from the very beginning when they're first hired to use their creativity and intelligence. And they don't make them feel as new employees that they don't have a lot to offer already. Of course, Google is like hiring really, really good people. But a lot of the good people they're hiring are new and they're young. So a principle that Prabhupada employed is exactly this, that you give people a job and you push them out of the nest and you say, go fly, go for it. But I don't know how to fly. Well, you'll figure it out. Go do it. A lot of confidence. You know, just figure it out, just do it. You have the instruction, 16 rounds, 4 regular principles, spread the Krishna consciousness movement. That's your strength. That's your inspiration. Krishna will give you intelligence how to do things. And sometimes the intelligence Krishna gives you is that you don't know how to do something and you find somebody who can do it. That's also... Don't think that you have to do everything. Krishna will give you the intelligence to understand what you can't do. So you have to get somebody who can help you. So in these companies, they put a lot of emphasis on individual creativity. That it's not like the CEO knows everything, but everybody contributes. So in Google, 20% of your time, so let's say you work, well, they probably work at least 50 hours there. So that's 10 hours. 10 hours a week, which means you're working 5 days. That means 2 hours every day, you're free to do whatever you want and just create and come up with ideas that how the company could be made better. So a lot of the things that Google is doing now were things that people created in their spare time. In that 2 hours a day they have to just do whatever they want. Isn't that interesting? So they put a lot of trust in them. And so we understand as devotees that Krishna inspires the inspired devotee. Krishna gives intelligence. So if you walk around thinking, I don't know anything, I'm stupid, my guru knows everything, if I don't hear from him, I can't tie my shoe, you're nearly not going to serve your guru very well. But, just like sometimes I'll tell devotees to do something, this and that, and they'll come back and say, wouldn't it be better if we do it this way? And I'll say, yeah, you're right, that's good, do it. So that's what we want, or just instruction here. We want to start this project. Well, how do we do it? I don't know, just do it. Figure it out. You figure it out. We need to do this, right? Or, we're doing a program. We need to get 100 people there who will pay 1,000 pesos. How do we do it? I have no idea. You figure it out. Just do it, That kind of, okay, we're going to do this. We want to, like Prem Kishore says, we want to get 1,000 people chanting japa in the park. How to do that? You figure it out. Whatever that means, go on the internet and figure out how to, Google, how do you get 1,000 people in a park? Something, we just, how do we make Mantra Project better? How do we make Soul Tools better? Whatever. How do we do anything? So you're given a vision so that, like companies give people a vision. And then they give people the freedom to create. I was just talking to Vaisheshika, and he said when he once gave a program at Google. He does it, I guess, quite regularly because he lives near there. And the devotees have a club, so I think they give classes every week. It's kind of interesting that Google would let them give a Bhagavad Gita class, just doing that. That's nice. So he said, he talked to some of the people. He wanted to find out what makes Google Google, the way it's special. And he said, they encourage us to think big, to think in ways we've never thought before. So this is another characteristic of a good company. And Prabhupada was the ultimate revolutionary because what he did, nobody could conceive of was possible. At this point, class continued with a discussion about preaching, and it was a very interesting discussion, but it didn't fit in with this first topic of who's ready for initiation, so that's why it sounds like the class just ended abruptly. And the class continued. It was more of an internal discussion for an organization we're doing called Soul Tools. But I will also put that up online somewhere. I'm not sure where it's going to be, but I think it's an interesting discussion for any group of devotees who want to preach, that they can listen to kind of our ethos we have, the culture we're trying to create, and in terms of creating an inspiring environment for devotees to work in. Okay, Hare Krishna.